This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Rapper Talib Kweli has been a big name in hip-hop for 20 years. Grew up in Brooklyn, got his start with the underground rap scene in the 90s, late 90s. He's enjoyed commercial success, worked with top names in the industry, including Kanye West, Kendrick Lamar. Talib's lyrics often politically conscious as he examines issues like police brutality and mass incarceration.
People of color, 25% more likely than whites who face prison. But just because the president is black, there's no more racism. Most racial, more like most racial. The hate for you, disgraceful. Don't let it take you off your base. Let it motivate you. Don't let it overtake you. So what another cloud's about the storm, but riding on the beast of the southern wild.
That's a clip from Talib Kweli's song It Only Gets Better from his 2013 album Prisoner of Conscience. Talib performs two sold-out shows tonight and tomorrow at Motorco in Durham. He's also going to be speaking tomorrow at the BU Cafe in Durham. The event is called Beautiful Struggle, Hip-Hop's Role in the Trump Era. But first, he joins me in the studio, Talib Kweli. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
You're not a stranger here because I know you've worked with Ninth Wonder and Rhapsody. We claim them as local favorites, but the world owns them now.
Yeah, shout out to my whole Indy 500 family, E. Jones and Crisis and Ninth Wonder and Rhapsody and everybody. And Ninth actually told a story yesterday saying that the first time he met me was at the Cat's Cradle when I did a show in 2001, and he took me to the Waffle House, and I didn't know that. You know what I'm saying? So I learned something.
That was back in the Little Brother days.
Yeah, that was before Little Brother. He said him and Fonte drove me to the Waffle House and played me Little Brother demos before they put out their first record.
All right, what'd you think of them then? Come on.
I don't remember that at all. Knife told that story yesterday, and I never knew that actually happened.
You've been a professional hip-hop artist now for two decades, and I want to talk about your roots because you grew up in Brooklyn, but you know, we're talking Park Slope, Brooklyn,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And your parents, both educators, your brother teaches law at Columbia Law School. So you had a kind of a good background, a privileged background in some ways.
I have a lot of privileges. I was absolutely privileged to grow up in the city at the time that I grew up in the city, to grow up in such a diverse community, to grow up as the son of educators. These are all privileges that I was born with, certainly.
Tell us how that led to your career, or did it? How that contributed to your work, your creative work now in hip-hop?
My parents always encouraged me to look beneath the surface, peel back the layers, and I think that my music has served that purpose.
How so? You're in what ways do you see yourself and the music serving that purpose?
Well, the crux of my lyrical inspiration comes from struggle, comes from speaking out for oppressed people, comes from combating injustice. I look at myself as an entertainer first. The music comes first, the song comes first, and everything else has to happen organically. But what I find myself gravitating towards, what I find myself talking about, and the music that has inspired me the most, the music that I personally enjoy most, is music that speaks to the struggle.
Your critics will call you a conscious rapper, and I wonder if you're comfortable with that. I mean, you just, you know, talked about the fact that you are politically conscious. That's something that's important to you. Is it okay to be to be understood and be seen that way?
Absolutely, but it's also important for those of us who enjoy conscious rap to understand two things, that a lot of people who claim to enjoy conscious hip-hop don't actively support it at all in any way. They don't buy the music. They don't buy a T-shirt. They don't buy concert tickets. They just complain about how there's no conscious rap on the radio, and they wonder why, you know? But more prevalent than that is the fact that within hip-hop circles, outside of hip-hop circles, you know, there are forces that have tried to paint conscious rap as condescending or corny or something that's not in touch with real hip-hop. Which is absolutely false, and those of us who love hip-hop have to always push back against that. So while I identify as a conscious rapper, and I wear that well, I do it well, I enjoy it, it's what I'm good at, what I'm known for, it's not all that I do. All my songs are not conscious. I'm no more only a conscious rapper than Jay-Z is only a gangster rapper.
Well, and I wonder if it's a false dichotomy in some ways, and maybe more than a dichotomy, but does it have to be that way? We're talking about a sort of a creative act, making music, and there's a lot of things you can talk about. You can talk about falling in and out of love, or you can talk about police brutality and you know, the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, it's lazy to label a conscious rapper, or a gangster rapper, a trap rapper. It's very lazy, and it doesn't serve the art when you label music like that. It only serves the people who make money off of art. It only serves the vultures because they are not creative enough I don't have enough passion or compassion to understand that artists are not just one thing. And they need to label it and put it in a box, because if they don't label it and put it in a box, they won't be able to sell it as easily.
Well, let's take us back a little bit and talk about the evolution, at least since you began in the 90s, and certainly it started long before then, but you teamed up with, in the 90s, fellow Brooklyn rapper Mos Def, now goes by Yasiin Bey, and you formed the hip-hop duo Black Star. Tell us about Black Star. What was the aesthetic there? What was the experience behind that?
At the time we formed Black Star, I was just really a fan of Mos Def. He was a local artist who, he had done a lot of TV work. He was more known for his TV work than he was for his raps. But I was a fan of him as a musician. And our families, he had a child the same time I had a child. We became friends on that we had children the same age. And he was somebody I was hanging out with. He got a deal with Ruckus. I knew the guys from Ruckus, but I didn't have a record deal. So when I came to them for a record, I was inspired by Mos Def to go to Ruckus and try to get a record deal there. But their vision was, well, let's put out these records with you and Mos Def. I had a song with Mos Def called Fortify Live. So my first song I've ever put out featured Mos Def. Yeah. And so the success of that song made all of us, Ruckus, Mos, myself, say, let's do this Black Star album.
Let's listen to a little bit of that album. This is a song called Definition.
Brooklyn, New York City, where they paint murals of Biggie and Cash we trust, cause this ghetto fabulous life look pretty, what a pity, blunts are still 50 cents, it's intense, street sense is dominant, can't be covered with incense, my presence felt, my name is Quali from the eternal reflection, people think your MC is shorthand for misconception, let me meditate, set it straight, came to the conclusion that most of these cats is featherweight, let me demonstrate, walking the streets is like battling, be careful with your body, you must know karate, you think your soul is bulletproof like Sade.
There we go. A clip from Definition, hip-hop duo Black Star. My guest is Talib Kweli, who is one half of Black Star. He's performing tonight and tomorrow at Motorco in Durham. Those shows are sold out, but he's going to be speaking tomorrow afternoon at the BU Cafe in Durham. A little bit about the history of hip-hop. Why was it? I mean, so you're a fan of Mos Def at the time. That's one thing. He probably had a lot of fans who said, hey, help me get a deal. What is it that they heard in your work that made them think, hey, you two should team up?
They heard Mos Def. They heard, like, that's, I mean, I'm being funny, yeah. But yeah. That's literally what it was. I played them a bunch of songs. I didn't play them the song with Mos Def. I played them a bunch of songs, and as I was fast-forwarding past that song, because I wanted to save it, so fast-forwarding past that song, they heard Mos Def. I said, what's that? I said, well, this is the song I got with Mos Def. They said, let's put that one out. So that's literally what they heard in me, was they heard Mos Def on the
record. Where was music at the time? Because we're talking about the 1990s, which I consider some kind of a golden age, not the golden age, but a real flourishing of, again, a multiplicity of forms of music. How strong was hip-hop at the time, and how had it evolved? Where did it come from to get to that point?
At the time when I got my deal?
Yeah, yeah.
At the time I got my deal, hip-hop had already been hugely popular. It had achieved sort of cartoonishly WWF levels of heavy metal music, levels of yeah, you know, like capitalism at that point.
Yeah.
MC Hammer was a thing already. Vanilla Ice was a thing already. The bad boy music, Puff, Sean P. Diddy Combs, really, really dominated the scene. And when I say dominated, I mean that on a personal level, because my introduction to the music industry is working for Puff. I used to hand out flyers for his parties for the Tunnel. Puff, Funkmaster Flex, DJ Enough. Mm-hmm. This is pre-Hot 97. To me, I never looked at Puffy as the anti of hip-hop. But when we started making those records, bad boy music, Puff was sampling Kool & the Gang. He was sampling Hollywood Swingin'. He was sampling David Bowie, Let's Dance. He was sampling hugely popular pop music records. And our hip-hop aesthetic at that time was about digging in the crates. It was about being abstract and obscure. You didn't pick a popular sample because that was laziness. That's how we felt. So a lot of the people in my community, even though me personally, I had respect for Puff because I had worked personally with him, we were looking at what he was doing like, nah, that's not hip-hop. And so the Black Star album was very much saying, in this community, it's about the beats and the rhymes, and you're not going to just rhyme over a popular sample. You're gonna rhyme over some obscure jazz sample that no one knows what it is. And so that's what the Black Star, the aesthetic of the Black Star album was like, we're not going to rhyme about, we're not going to wear shiny suits. Like, we really pushing back against that Puffy video with Mace when they had the shiny suits. Like, we're not going to wear the shiny suits. We're not going to sample familiar records. We're not going to rap about champagne and cars and traveling from island to island. We are going to rap about the struggle. We are going to rap about respecting our roots. That's really what the focus was.
One of the, you know, apart from the visuals and some of the topics and themes in that kind of music, when you talk about Puff Daddy, the notion of sampling popular music, I had always heard, and to me it worked in this way. It's recontextualizing. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. just ripping it off. It's saying, listen to that this way.
Yeah.
Listen to what. So in that way, I mean, it had that effect. So what?
Because I've been doing music for a long time, I have a lot more respect now for what Puffy was doing, because I understand, even for, like I mentioned, MC Hammer, when I was working on Black Star, MC Hammer might as well have been the devil to me. Like, if I saw MC Hammer, I might have tried to trip him in the street. Like, I really didn't like MC Hammer. Yeah. Now, as a 41-year-old man, he's a friend of mine. Now, 3 years ago, me and Mos Def went over his house and we recorded a couple of Black Star songs at MC Hammer's house. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you grow to realize that people have a different experience than you might have. Puffy did, I mean, he made some great records. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of hip-hop fans, including myself, that were around then, if you hear those Bad Boy records in a club now, the nostalgia will make you be like, that was my jam. You know what I'm saying?
Whether it's true or not, right?
Whether it's true or not, you'd be like, I was there when that was a hit, therefore that's my jam.
But now talk about your aesthetic at the time when you said, no, I want more obscure jazz riffs, that's what we're going to sample here. Did it have apart from what you were thinking, which I think maybe to expose this, because this is part of our history, it's a culture you need to know about it, did it work that way, do you think? Did people become more aware of a kind of musical history that perhaps was lost?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Just my own personal anecdotal experience is that my love for music and my musical knowledge, I know a lot about music. The reason why, about all different genres, the reason why I know a lot about music is because I'm a student of hip-hop. If I wasn't a student of hip-hop, I wouldn't know about rock and roll, blues, funk, jazz. I wouldn't know about it. I would only know about hip-hop. I would only know about what I like. I find that people who like rock and roll, they know about rock and roll. People who like jazz, they know about jazz. People like hip-hop because, especially not all people like it, but people who, particularly from my generation of hip-hop, we were sampling so many records. Sampling was so much a part of the aesthetic of what the music sounded like that if you really were a student of hip-hop, you were reading those album credits and then you were going to get those records that were being sampled. And my father collected records as a college student. So there was records all over my house growing up. So I had the unique experience of hearing a hip-hop record. It was like, man, it was the best hip-hop record out. And then I would see what they sampled, and my father had that record. So then I would be able to go. And that really, really, really expanded my musical knowledge.
Let's talk about your solo success as well. Your debut solo album, Quality, came out in 2002, and it featured a hit single, Get By, and I want to play a little bit of that right now.
We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. We smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. What till we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone? To get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We commute the computer, spirits stay mute while your ego spread rumors. We survivalists turn to consumers. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. Why some people gotta live in a trailer? Cause like a sailor, I paint a picture with a pen like Norman Mailer. Me and Wella raised 3 daughters all by herself with no help. I think about a struggle and I find the strength of myself. These words melt in my mouth, they hot like the jail cell in the south before my nigga core bailed me out. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by.
And that's a clip from the song Get By rapper Talib Kweli from his 2002 album Quality. Talib performs tonight and tomorrow at sold-out performances at Motor Co., but he's going to be speaking tomorrow afternoon if you want to catch him at the BU Cafe in Durham. Tell us when you started going solo, were things changing for you in terms of your understanding of the music and how you felt about what you wanted to do?
The music and the way I was inspired, the type of music I was making was very similar. That was a beat, that was Kanye West, that was like one of his first hit records. It was very much...
He produced that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That track was very much in line with what I was doing with High Tech and Mos Def. But now I saw the possibility. Before Get By, we had success as Black Star. I had success with High Tech, with The Blast and other records. So now I understood that I had my foot in the door, and the possibilities were now endless. Now I'm like, you know, I got, you know, Snoop Dogg and DJ Quick, who are gangster rappers, are my fans now, and people I could get on the phone. And, you know, I could get on the phone with Pharrell or Mary J. Blige and ask them to be on the track. And Jay-Z jumped on the remix for Get By, and Busta Rhymes and 50 Cent got on the remix for Get By. So now I'm like, okay, I'm feeling validated at this point. I'm feeling like I'm doing the right thing.
Well, and when the Obamas, when Barack Obama said that's one of his favorite songs, mm-hmm. that had to mean something to you.
It did. I mean, I visited the White House a few times last year, and he repeated it every time. He identifies me with Get By. Like, he sees me, he's like, yeah, you know, you gave me this.
I don't think they're still playing that at the White House. I'm not sure, but I believe it's not on the White House playlist anymore.
Maybe they're playing Kid Rock.
Could be. Actually, just speaking about he whose name shall be spoken as Donald Trump, political messages.
Is he Voldemort now?
Well, I'm going to listen to this song, YG, you know, because we talked about politically conscious.
Can we just take a moment to say God bless YG? I just wanted to say that. I had to get that out.
All right. Why?
Well, because I've actually been playing YG's song, FDT, at my concerts. I've literally been performing this song at my concerts for the last 2 months. And I gotta thank YG for giving me a way. He expressed how I felt more eloquently than I could have.
F Donald Trump. Now, we've actually not even bleeped it out, so he'll just.
You don't have to do that here.
This is it, but we didn't bleep it out. But there's a hidden F in front of every Donald Trump, and here's how it goes.
Yeah, Donald Trump. Yeah, Donald Trump. Yeah, Donald Trump. Yeah, F Donald Trump. Yeah. I like white folks, but I don't like you. All the in the hood wanna fight you. Surprise the nation of Islam ain't tried to find you. Have a rally out LA.
No, sir.
Home of the ride and the king ride. We don't give a black students ejected from your rally. What? I'm ready to go right now. Your racist did too much.
FDT, that would be F Donald Trump by the rapper YG. I'm talking with Talib Kweli, who performs tonight in Toronto Motor Co. He's going to be at the BU Cafe in Durham. What's the impact of that kind? I mean, clearly this has been, you know, a form of protest music for a long mm-hmm. time. Is this a new age? Does this change anything?
YG, if you know anything about YG, he's a Los Angeles rap artist that was raised in the era of NWA. And so it makes sense. His music is gangster rap music. It makes sense that YG would be the new, he would make the new F the Police. It makes total sense. NWA looked at themselves as the public enemy for the streets. So YG is looking at himself as the, if J. Cole and Kendrick are now the newer artists who are now looked at the socially conscious, he's like, I'm going to say the same thing they say, but just in a more street fashion. And that's exactly what F Donald Trump is. And that song, and keep in mind, YG made that song almost 2 years ago. That's not a new song. Mm. YG made that song because as a black person who grew up in L.A., YG made that song when Donald Trump said Mexicans are rapist, and after the people were getting kicked out of the rallies. As someone living in L.A., he's from an underprivileged neighborhood in L.A., he doesn't just see how Donald Trump affects himself. He sees how it affects Mexicans on a real, real, real level. He's a dude who's dealt with gangs. Culture and like the codes and like the gang laws enacted in Los Angeles were very discriminatory. So he sees it firsthand.
I've only got a minute left, but I got to get your take on the Grammys. Beyonce shut out. What do you think?
I you know what? I walked in the Grammys into my house. Bilal was at my house at the time, and I walked in and I said, the Grammys seem so black. You know what I'm saying? Like, I walked in and like Tribe Called Quest was on stage, and then Chance the Rapper and Kirk Franklin. You know, do I think Beyonce should have won the Grammy? I don't know. I really don't give up. I really don't care about the Grammys. Mm-hmm. The Grammys mean nothing. Adele is a wonderful singer, you know, but we all know how great Beyonce is. I think it's hilarious that no matter what the year is, all the artists know that Beyonce should be given some sort of award for something. That's how it always goes.
Talib Kweli, he is my guest today. What a pleasure. So good to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
He is performing at a sold-out show tonight and another one tomorrow at Motoco in Durham. He'll be talking tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock at the BU Cafe in Durham, and we've got that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a one-man show that looks at the life and legacy of Stokely Carmichael. Stay tuned.